Welcome to Not a Big Deal, the podcast aimed to make first-time marketing leaders feel less alone. I'm Kelly, joined by my wonderful co-host, Lucy. Hey, Lucy.
Hello. How are you?
Man, I'm loving the fresh beats this morning.
We're really, each week we've said this before, we're trying to add bits of professionalism into the podcast. Should we confess that you've not been feeling well?
We should.
Sound a bit croaky.
I sound a bit croaky. I feel a bit croaky, but she's on the up and up. I caught COVID at a team offsite. Can't believe that bad boy's still going around, but 2024 and I got it.
That's not the first time you've got it though, surely.
No, the last time I had it was 2 years ago, actually on my birthday. So that was much more sad. Yeah, I got it from a 400 person wedding. So I was going in knowing I was going to walk out with COVID.
400 person wedding. I don't know how much we've talked about our weddings that are like 2 months apart. But my wedding is definitely not 400 people. I can't imagine doing a 400. Have you even ever organized a 400 person event?
No. I can't. Well, maybe at Salesforce I was a part of one, but I wasn't the lead organizer. I was like contributing content, but I can't imagine.
A panic attack.
Absolutely. Our wedding was 80 and that was felt like 1 million. So
I've done conferences and stuff. I guess it's slightly different when it's work because it ends up being that it's not necessarily your friends. Like we had like lots of like community events, so also you're on a social level, which is like even more intense when it's a work thing. But I guess with a wedding you know everyone, but 400 people you don't know that well.
No, that's like your mom's cousin's dog is invited. So that was that. That one was COVID 1.0 for me. Then a team offsite in Manchester was COVID 2.0. So you know what? I have those antibodies that are going to carry me through the rest of summer, and I'm here for it. So thank you, COVID.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm 3 weeks out to our wedding, so like a slight anxiety is just running through me. But I wouldn't say, I can't really explain as to what. I think actually, maybe talking slightly on how can I shoehorn my wedding into something that's work and marketing related. But because I've never had a wedding before, you don't know what might go wrong. So everyone kind of says like, oh, you won't really know what will go wrong on the day. And so I'm kind of living in that that pre-launch. You know, I remember always having this with work of like, you'd go and launch a project, but it would never be the same project as what I had done before. So you have this like, I actually don't know what's going to come up and what might happen. So I guess I'm feeling similar to that. That was, I think, impressive podcasting that I made my wedding about marketing.
Yeah. That was an incredible correlation you just nailed. But I think there is something to it. And I think all you can do is know that just like in any launch, it's going to be okay. True. And you're going to roll with the punches and like only you know what was supposed to happen, you know? And so, Sam, I'm keeping it going.
No, and also, have you ever launched remotely? Because that is truly, at least I'll be there. When you do the launch remotely and everybody else is in the office and then you're just sat on your own like, wait, is everything okay? What's gone wrong?
Oh, I was going to say, I've done launches where everyone's remote and it's incredibly anticlimactic. You're like, should we all get on a Zoom to like have a little whoop whoop? Like, what do we do here?
I remember it when the whole team was in Amsterdam and I was in London. And then I remember you like said it live and then you just don't hear anything on Slack and you're like, is everything okay? Like what's going on? And then the moment something goes wrong, it feels 10 times worse because you're not in the office.
Yeah.
It gives me a heebie-jeebie.
It's going to be amazing. Your wedding is going to be everything and nothing at the same time.
I'm sure. I hope I don't after my wedding think like, wow, so similar to a good old marketing launch.
I hope not. I hope for you it's going to be like nothing you've ever experienced before.
So I have the trending piece of content today. Surprise, surprise, another TikTok. I am currently work-wise working on a website redesign. So I am interested in all things onboarding, conversion, testimonials, what convinces people. And I came across this and thought, okay, actually, it made me really second guess what we had on the website, actually. So I'll play it now.
I don't know about you guys, but when I see a business post a client testimonial with like a big paragraph of text from what the client said, I literally scroll away so fast. No one is telling you how to actually share your client testimonials in a way that will make people read them and want to work with you. So I'm going to put you on. So the trick to sharing client testimonials is don't share client testimonials. I don't want to see that hunk of text that they wrote for you. I literally don't want to see it anywhere. What I do want is for you to sit down and tell me where that client was when they came to you, what you worked on, and what transformation they walked away with. And I don't want like black and white figures and just random numbers. Like, I want to know, what were their fears? What were their doubts? What were they struggling with? And what was it like to work with them as a human being? I want to watch that piece of content and I want to know exactly what it is like to work with you as a coach and why, if I also do the things that you did with this client, I will get the same result. This is what selling in your content actually means. It's not posting a discount code. It's not saying that you're running a promotion or to go to your website. This is what selling means. It's 2024 and I can guarantee you that our attention spans are not long enough to read a massive bank of text that your client wrote for you. So get yourself on camera, start talking about your clients, and I promise you, you will make more sales this way. And if you want
to... So I watched that, sent it to our design agency, and was like, oh my God, she is so right. I do not ever read those chunks of text. I actually always think they're made up to some degree. And yeah. I just don't really think they're authentic or engage me in any way. And I would say I am someone who is always in that camp of like, how do we sell? How do we get the emotional stuff? What do we do? And I watched that and I thought, I've literally got a website where I'm going through the design and we have that. And I'm not thinking, how do we bring, you know, the customers to life or what we're doing. And it just really made me stop for a minute and think, why have I got big chunks of text with quotes?
It's really interesting. I like it a lot. I think everyone does the same thing. Like, it's like a customer testimonial, a customer success story is a written story. I don't know, 1,000 words. The before, the during, and the results, or the challenge, you know, along came your brand, the hero, the results you delivered. I think you said it doesn't feel authentic. And I think that's the first word I thought of is like, she said, we're in 2024, you know, like we're selling differently. And I think people want real scenarios. They want you to be honest. And I think customer stories that it depends on your product, I guess, like at Meter, it is a serious transformation. And don't say it's easy, like, because it's not. Like, I think people want you to be like, here's how we got this person on board. And here's, you know, how we knew we needed a solution. And it's hard to do that. It, like, I find it's very easy to go back to what is normal. And it's, I think this is a great reminder of like, continue to challenge the norms of like B2B bland, be different. And it's not anything revolutionary, but it's just think differently. What is always adding value?
And I think it's that tricky bit, right? With like wanting to be succinct, also having loads of comms on your website. Well, she's talking about social, but I was thinking about it for the website. Having lots of stuff I want to say on the website, making sure it's simple, going and shooting like content on for a website is very different from shooting content on social. But it really did make me think, like, I am just doing the default, but I know how to sell this stuff. So yeah, I don't know, it just really, it stopped me in my tracks for a minute. And I thought, I liked her directness. I thought, yeah, girl, I agree.
Give it to us straight.
And actually, like, kind of linked to that, which I thought was also like an interesting thing that I saw this week, was Camilla Moore again, that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. She had an Instagram post saying that also the way that we're looking at like websites and social is different. Now people are using social media as a way of qualifying the company rather than rather than kind of like going on and then using Instagram or something to sell, it's actually that they're going onto your account, checking that you look legit. Do you feel like aligned with what you're doing? And then they'll go to the website. And I thought, like, yeah, that's also interesting. It's that they want to know you're legit on social. It's not that they're going to start like following you or scrolling even necessarily. Like, they just want to be like, yeah, it's a legit company. Right, I'll go and read a review. And so all of that stuff is changing of where people are using, people are using social for. Also how we want to hear the story of like, how your customer service is, what the experience is like with working with you, rather than like, we'll get you these results in 3 weeks.
Totally. I also think another thing that social does, and same with this clip we talked about, like client testimonials, is everything can sort of show your personality. And I think maybe more and more, I don't know if it's a millennial or even a Gen Z thing, is that people, or at least I'll speak for myself, I want to work with companies that I like respect or like. And I think a lot of that, this is going to tie in really well to what we're talking about today.
An amazing transition
is brand marketing. And I think all those little touch points influence how you make someone feel. And that makes you a brand that they're interested in working with. And it's all about like, how do you appeal to who you're targeting? What do they want? And I guess, and maybe for her customer testimonials, I could challenge her a little bit. Like, maybe if you're maybe it depends on who your persona is. Like, maybe if you're targeting an engineer, they actually want a very different kind of customer testimonial than someone in marketing. I guess that'd be my only caveat on sort of what she said, but that's not a challenge, it's just like an asterisk.
An engineer is still a person with emotions, Kelly.
I know, but they would want more like fact-based.
True. No, I know what you mean.
They want to read a long-form piece of content, but yeah, they still want to feel something. They still want a customer story, but it just might look a little different to what you're doing to someone in marketing.
True.
Sorry to any engineers that I offended. I didn't mean anything by it.
I made it offensive.
Okay. Well, this is our second episode of us not screaming out to the world about what imposters we are. Because last week, if you haven't listened, we talked about all things product marketing. And this week, we're going to talk about all things brand marketing. So diving into Lucy's area of expertise, passion, I can't wait to learn more from you today.
It's funny that you say we're not having imposter syndrome. You saying that, Lucy's expertise, immediately made me be like, no.
Not Why do we do that?
I've just got some good vibes about it. Yeah, I don't know. It freaks me out. But anyway, I'll try and be, I'm sure I'll be fine. Let's go.
You're going to be great. Don't undersell yourself at the onset of the podcast. You have tons of experience in this. And I am much more of a novice in this. I think this is something I've had to learn a lot more in my new role, is like, what is brand? How sort of are you the harbor of brand? But even, I think we just started a very basic question, which you did the same for me, is like, can you describe what brand is? What does it mean?
Yeah, I tried not to Google this to check I was right, actually. Because when I started to think about where I see brand for a company, I feel it's talking about the feeling that the brand has. It's kind of having this emotion that surrounds the brand. And that can be either the emotion that you as a brand have, like the emotion that you want to bring to people when they start to look at the brand or use the brand. You know, if it's a brand around security, let's say, maybe you want to make sure that when someone's coming to your website, kind of taken care of, secure, that they feel that there's this informativeness that makes them feel like, okay, I can trust this brand. Whereas, and I think there's also part of it, so that's like the one side of it. The other side of it is also the affiliation that people have with you. So I think that there's stuff that can come from brand, which is that feeling or the emotion that you give as a company, also how that makes someone feel wearing it or using it or having it in their home, and having that emotion or kudos that comes with it. So for me, brand is all emotion, I think.
I mean, it's not a space to agree or disagree, but I agree. Like, I think it's all about how you make someone feel. When they think of your brand, what do they think? Is it trusted? Is it fun? Is it, and you tell me, but I feel like a lot of that plays into who you're targeting. Like, if you're targeting, yeah, daycares, it's going to be a very different brand to a cybersecurity company.
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. And why do you love brand marketing? Why is it something you're so passionate about?
I kind of fell into doing more brand marketing stuff. So it wasn't necessarily something that I was like, oh, this is what I'm passionate about. I had quite a weird way of getting there. But what I've realized if I go back through my career is I like the idea of kind of psychology around marketing, or how you get people to be interested in something. So I used to be a picture editor. So a lot of that is like, what's the best image to get people to want to read or tell the story? And then it's from that has always evolved through photography and then into more doing different brand stuff. And I think this idea of convincing, or again, going back to emotion, what is the thing that people are feeling, is the reason I love marketing and I find it super interesting. And so I think always that attracted me is trying to think about someone's state of mind when they're making a decision, like a purchasing decision, or why they want to follow you, why they want to be involved in the brand, why do they feel passionately about the brand, why are they going to talk about you? All of that stuff is I like. And so I think that just quite quickly kind of lined up with this kind of like psychology. Kelly already knows I like went and did a foundation in like psychodynamic therapy because I was like, oh, maybe should I have been a psychologist? Would that be quite close to what I'm doing now? So it's always a fine line for me, but yeah, the marketing side of it, I really enjoy.
Yeah. I think you're very empathetic. I don't know if that makes it like in general, if marketers are empathetic, but I think from what I can tell is like you are very good at resonating with who you're targeting and like really getting into their mindset, making sure you deeply understand your customers, then you know how to appeal to them, how to help them do better in their jobs. And I guess that is sort of brand as well.
I remember there was a big thing for me with understanding how people were thinking. So at WeTransfer, we were like this tech company. Everyone liked WeTransfer in terms of it's file sharing. But I started out, I knew like some people in the photography industry, but I wasn't like some kind of big photography hotshot in London. And I was coming over from Amsterdam working for this tech company. And I was going and meeting agencies. I remember like going into this agency in Camden and trying to get this quite big photographer to work with us. And the dynamic of the meeting was truly awful. I think they just were like, great, yeah, if you want us to work with you as a tech company, like you're going to have to give us so much money. And I just thought like, oh no, I don't want to start a partnership off like this where you just see us as a bank. And I felt really passionately about that with WeTransfer. Like, no, we're really trying to do something for creatives with the content we were doing. And I really had to come away and think, what are the things that are going to convince people? What do photographers want to be able to want to work with us, shout about it? And then I had to go away and like have a think about realistically, photographers were always doing either editorial work for free or commercial work, but then they didn't have as much creative freedom. And so what we actually went away and decided was, okay, we're going to fund personal projects. We're not going to say, okay, we want you to shoot this, but we're going to say, what are the personal projects you want to do? And then we'll fund them. And from changing that narrative in the meetings I was having, opened up, everyone was super pumped about it. No one else was funding these projects. It meant photographers were happy because they got creative freedom. Agents were happy because they were getting funding for a project that they would usually not get paid for. And then everyone wanted to shout about it because they were super excited to get this personal project that they wouldn't have been able to do, or they would have lost money doing. And for me, that was like a big, I guess all of that, that's such a subtle change. They were still working for WeTransfer. We still had like decent budgets, but it was, it ended up being that slight change in how I communicated it, then got people excited and sold into the mission and wanted to shout about it. And I think that that's like brand marketing. It's how do you slightly change that way of communicating or how you're formatting it to then click with people and be like, oh, I feel passionate about it now. I feel emotional. This is something I've, you know, wanted.
That's such a cool project. I love that idea. I think, again, it's like, you know, your target persona so well, you knew their biggest challenge and what motivates them. And it's to actually be creative while making money. Like, that's the ultimate dream. Would you call that, is that a brand campaign that you guys ran? Or is it just a, yeah, what would you call it?
We did do like, I guess, like more traditional, like out of home stuff. But actually with WeTransfer, it was kind of interesting because it was a main, it was like an online platform to some degree, which had content. So almost like an online magazine. But because obviously all of the backgrounds on WeTransfer were usually creative work or ads, but majority was creative a lot of the time, or what people saw. So it was kind of to keep, we kind of had this idea of, creative people are using WeTransfer, which can could be a really boring thing where you upload an image or film. And we knew our customers were creative. And so we kind of saw it as like, this is going to be the thing that will keep them using WeTransfer, that something was creative on the product. And then being able to see new work and see new photographers was the thing that people really felt affiliated to the company and why they would stick around. And that was a big differentiator for us instead of Dropbox. Like, the product was super simple to use, but the fact that there was creative work and we were kind of funding creative projects was a reason why emotionally people would come back.
100%. I was just going to say that it's the emotion. You created such a, like a brand loyalty because you're literally helping them with their careers. That's I just think it's such an amazing brand campaign project. I love it. I think you're sort of starting to dive into this a bit, but I just want to ask it straight up, is what constitutes a strong brand? Like, how do you, what are the key elements that you should be thinking about when you're trying to build a brand, especially when you're starting from scratch? What matters?
So I'll preface this by saying, I think there was, what, 5 years ago, maybe, there was this big push on purpose. So what was your purpose as a company? What was your purpose as a brand? And like, I remember then lots of people would have these quite, it would be the stuff of like Pride. And all of a sudden, like a bank would be sponsoring Pride. And I remember for a while, Lloyds Bank started doing this huge mental health campaign, which, do not get me wrong, supporting Pride, doing the mental health campaigns, all fantastic. But well, I say that all fantastic. All like, in, I want those things to be funded. But what was interesting is that it felt those huge misalignment between purpose and knowing that you, that customers wanted something that, that they cared, they wanted you to care about something. And what was funny is that I think you saw people miss a lot of the time because it felt so different from what they do or what their purpose was. And so in that sense, I think when I say purpose, I mean in the sense of what is the customer base that you're finding that you feel there's something missing. So there's this olive oil called Grazza. I think I'm saying that right. And it's this olive oil. It's, I think, in the US, but the branding is chef's kiss. Like, it's super nice. It looks really funky. It's the Aesop soap of olive oil. And what they also did is put the tops on like chefs use. So, you know, like when chefs will like go and just squeeze olive oil on the pan. They've done that for at your home. So then I look at their target market, right? Somebody who's buying Aesop's soap, cares about design, loves cooking, and then they've basically their whole brand, that whole experience of what you get of using that olive oil is like that you're affiliated with, like, I'm the type of person at home who has this olive oil, who like cares about good olive oil. And I thought, like, that is the purpose. They have found that niche. Like, and they don't need to now start saying, oh, we're going to start giving 5p to everything too. Like, that's great if they want to do initiatives within marketing of like giving back to staff or talking to their, you know, they might want to fund some olive oil, olive tree planting. Sure. But all of that is in the container of that brand, I think. And I think it's just a really good, like, simple example of just a brand who said, like, we're going to find a differentiator, which is going to speak to people that they're going to want to purchase.
I love that. I think I feel like I'm being a broken record on this podcast, maybe because personas are top of mind for me right now, but they have such a specific, like, ideal customer profile, and they're just going straight for it. And they don't need to be the olive oil for everyone. They're like the high end olive oil for people who love to cook. And that's where they're going. And they've nailed their target audience. I sort of have a follow-up question. So you talked a lot about purpose, which I really like. How do you bring that to B2B? Like, I'm selling, like, billing infrastructure. How do you bring purpose to a B2B brand that maybe isn't as slick and bougie as Aesop soap or Graza olive oil?
Yeah, it's an easier, I understand it's like a B2C product. So I think it, like, in real life product, whereas you and I have also sold tech stuff. So I think it's an easy example, but it's not the, there's not to also sound then similar to what we talked about last week in their product stuff, but I think there's two sides to it, right? It's understanding the customer base. So like you say, with the personas, I've actually never had to create personas. I've always, the audience has always been defined for me, which I think has been maybe easier in the sense of I've then had to just deep dive into that specific audience. But I truly think the way that you find brand is understanding what customers are worried about or the problem that they have, and then how you can solve that problem. So almost similar to what we talked about at the start, but, you know, for WeTransfer, it was that people needed to be able to send files. They chose WeTransfer because the product was simple, and then they liked that we had artwork and it felt aligned to their creative stuff. And so in that sense, it's what is the problem first, and then what do you solve for people? And I think that's when you start to be able to unlock what the brand feeling and personality is, because it's part of what they're struggling with.
Yeah, I love that. It's like the emotional, the social side of it, what matters most to them. That makes a ton of sense. So what are some things that you can do then to like build your brand or establish a new brand when you are an early stage company? Where do you begin? So it sounds like you really know your customers. You start with sort of personas. You understand what motivates them, what they're worried about. What do you then actually do?
So I think you could go pay an agency and they will probably give you a whole brand deck, persona. I've done different stuff where we've done a huge brand overhaul with an agency. I thought it was okay. I think you can over-engineer it, find brand quite scary and be like, oh, we need to think of a purpose. Where I got to a point to with it is you need to find the problem and what feeling you want people to feel when they're working with you. I think if you just started with that, you would start to be able to come up with ideas of how you can communicate. Or you could even just look at your website in a way that feels in a different lens, where you say, right, what is the problem? What is the feeling we want people to have? I did do once a brand triangle, and now I won't be able to remember what a brand pyramid. So this is like super practical, so bear with me, guys. But what I found was really useful doing a brand pyramid when I was at Recce, the company I was at before. So if you were looking at building a brand pyramid for your company, you'd look at the features and attributes. It's kind of at the bottom of the pyramid. So features and attributes, which are the most distinguishable product attributes and features. Then the functional benefits, so tangible benefits to the user. Emotional benefits, so how does that make your customer feel? And then the manifestation of brand in human characteristics, which I think is that's the interesting flip, I think, when you start to go to brand. And then at the top, you have the brand idea, which is the essence of your brand and what drives your positioning. And I think when I've sat and done that myself, just as an exercise, it's been really helpful to then start to guide questions or guide things that I feel could be enhanced by brand. But I think it's quite scary if you say, like, right, we want to start doing brand. You could spend, I have spent, when being a head of marketing, hours trying to put a brand deck together. And what I found actually is I did this pyramid, I could show it to different people in the company, we all kind of got aligned in it. And what that meant was it felt quite logical that I could say, like, okay, this is how I worked through it. And then it meant that, and we could use it in different ways rather than doing this huge brand deck and being like all these things. And, you know, you imagine it to be like you're at Nike and you're going to come up with the
tagline.
Yeah.
Just do it.
You're like, this is going to be my just do it. And once I've done that, it's going to unlock everything and we're going to be, and it's so hard to do that. So I would start with the triangle, try and work through it. And then it will just help you start to bring that brand in.
I really like that. And I think we talked about this in a past episode around sort of building your internal marketing reputation around people, like the myth being that people assume marketing is just super creative. And I think this grounds brand in reality, because I think another myth to add to that one is that, like, brand is just logos and colors, and that's what brand is. When actually what this shows, and actually we just talked about this at our company offsite last week, is everyone is a harbor of the brand. Like, every single person in the company influences brand, because what you can see from your pyramid is features are at the bottom. Your product is a part of your brand. Is it easy to use? Is the API engineering friendly? Yada, yada, yada. Like, it all starts with, so even engineers and product managers influence the brand. Then you have the functional benefits. That's like maybe what sales and marketing are helping tease out. Everyone contributes to this pyramid that builds your company purpose and how you make people feel. And I like that as a format to share.
Have you ever done one?
No, I've never even heard of it before.
Because I guess that I was actually going to ask you, because we've already talked about this before, but similar thing. When we first met, I would be doing this, like, I would be trying to, like, do these huge brand campaigns or brand stuff, because that was just where I came from in the company. And obviously you were more product. So I guess it's then of when you've started head of marketing, don't have the brand experience, how have you then found it to tease out that brand stuff or then start to question yourself about, like, what is brand?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the colors were already set when I came in. I haven't challenged those. To me,
it's, I like it that you said brand isn't just colors, and then you're like, the colors.
Well, that's what I was saying. That's where I started. I was like, this is fine. This is what I know. And then I was like, but the next level I know is how we make people feel. And that's where I was like, all I know is that we need a personality, because it's not just colors. And so we did a brainstorm on, I think it's called like the design archetypes with our two co-founders. Honestly, I should have prepped. I don't remember exactly what we ended up settling on. I just know it was majority like the Superman or something, where we're like, we're helpful, we're there when you need us. But then we had also a little bit of jester, because we want to be a little fun. We want to show some personality. And so that actually has helped us. While we maybe haven't communicated it super widely with the company, in marketing, we continue to be like, okay, but we're 10% jester. So what does that look like? How do we infuse a little fun in this? So mine has been less formulaic, and more just, we want to be known for being helpful, honest, a little bit of fun with some personality, and we're there for our customers. And that's sort of what I've used. So it's very informal, but it's served as a good enough guide to get us to where we are.
And I actually meant to bring it back. It's the same of what I'm saying around having these huge decks. You can completely over-engineer the whole thing. Yeah. And I think actually, especially in the position of like starting as a head of marketing, you're probably best to like, I think the brand pyramid is super helpful, like you say, to bring it back to like logic and features and it not feel like this up in the air thing. But also a great brand strategy is to keep it really simple for people to understand and feel that essence of the company in small places everywhere. And so actually I think for marketing, a lot of the time the struggle is like, you just have to stick with what you've decided is the brand, and not to get worried or like distracted with, oh, should we be doing this? Should we be doing this? You have to almost like steep yourself in that essence of what you think the company is and what that emotion is, and just keep trying to hit it and just keep saying it over and over and over again, because you'll think you're saying it a lot and you're not.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Okay. So once you know your brand a bit more, what are a few things you can do to start to build brand awareness? Is it always PR? Is it podcasts? Is it building your social media profile or your founders on social? What are things you do to build awareness of this great brand that you've now created?
To flip it back, it would depend on your brand. As in, if I think it's a brand around, I'm trying to think of like the WeTransfer example. What we did a lot of the time was wanted creatives to talk about us. So we would sometimes go and do podcasts and stuff like as a curation team, as a brand team. But a lot of, and so I'd go and talk about projects that were about creatives. If we had an article about WeTransfer, it was always about with a creative or about a creative project we were working on, or the creative person was mentioning us. And that was the kind of strategy we wanted, was, okay, we want people to be talking about us in this certain way. And so I think it's hard to say, okay, you want to get brand awareness, what are you going to go and do? I think everybody knows what's in your arsenal in terms of brand awareness. Like, yeah, you can do PR, you can do social, you can be doing podcasts, articles. But I think it's still a step back slightly of, well, what makes sense for your audience? Where are they? I think there was a brand campaign that we did at Recce, which I felt talked well to an idea of brand awareness campaign, but had this kind of angle, which we wanted it to feel super connected to our customers. Our customers were chefs. We were going and talking to different agencies about doing out-of-home campaigns. And I kept feeling like, oh, this feels slightly sterile to have just a bunch of different digital billboards like round Hackney, because I know that's probably where chefs live. And so I was like, okay, what else can we do? And so we were brainstorming in the office and we were like, okay, but actually if you have the digital billboards, if we're targeting chefs in the day, chefs are going to be in a kitchen or they're going to be at home. Like, they're not going to be walking around like all the rest of the population. And so what we then came up with the idea of doing is putting vinyl billboard ads on the shutters of restaurants. in on busy roads. So actually what I did, this is very startup, I have to say, but what I did was I walked round London on main roads at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I took pictures of every shutter that was down on every restaurant. So we did like Hackney, Brixton, nowhere in central has shutters, weirdly. Hackney, Brixton, Angel, like all these main roads that we could find. And we then found the restaurants that were using the app, and I called them and said, look, we're doing this out of home campaign. Can we please pay to rent your space of your vinyl, and we'll vinyl it? And what it did was like touched a couple of things that we cared about as the company. It talked so clearly to knowing chefs and talking in a way to chefs, saying we knew that they would only see the shutters when the restaurants are closed, because that's when chefs aren't in the kitchen. It gave money to restaurants that were already using the app. So it created this this feeling that we were like giving back to the industry that we cared about. And I think it was kind of big enough. We did like huge lettering. So I think it then started to create some hype where people would be like, oh yeah, I've seen that thing. And you know, if I look back on it, there's stuff we could have done. Like we didn't put a QR code on it. We probably could have done a better job of promoting it a lot more. But when it was live, it did feel like this hype all of a sudden had started. And we saw that website and onboarding improved from when that had gone live. And so I always feel weird to say like, oh, it's a super successful campaign, because I can't now sit and say Recce has like 3 million users. But at the time, it felt like this really exciting thing that we did that talked very much to building awareness.
I think that is so cool. I love that campaign. I'm just sitting here smiling. I'm like, oh my God, how do I do something like that? That is awesome. Do you have any pictures of the campaign? Could you share in your LinkedIn, LinkedIn updates so people can check it out?
Yeah, I will put a link to it in the show notes, and I will, I'll start plastering it all over LinkedIn. Like, hey guys, here's my amazing project.
I love it. Stop
in mind. It was a team effort.
It's a team effort. It's okay. Shout about it. Okay, so I have a final question for you, Lucy, which is a great one off the back of this awesome Recce campaign. How do you measure success? How do you know if you're moving the needle on brand, if your brand's resonating, people are getting it?
It's going to be the thing that feels like the fluffy bit of marketing, in the sense of, I think it's actually always quite tricky to track when you're running. It's not hard to track brand. Let's like maybe break it into two. Tracking brand is people being able to talk about your company in a way in which you want. So whether that's reviews, whether that's talking to people, like we're saying, we always listen to sales calls. Like I want someone to be able to say back to me what I want them to think about the company. And so in that sense, you can have a good idea of that on a smaller level, I think. Tracking brand awareness is the tricky bit, just purely because it's a feeling. You can start to think, oh, it feels like people are like buzzing about us, talking about us, da, 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 da. But what really, how can you like justify that you're running a brand awareness campaign, for example, on Facebook, and you're running something which is like baseline, this is our company and this is what we want you to think about us? You're gonna have to look at then impressions and looking at social followings, website traffic, that kind of stuff. But realistically, with that campaign, it's not going to be where you see conversion. What then I think you're better off doing is having a larger brand campaign with then smaller campaigns which either retarget those people or start to sell something that you can then start to be like, oh, actually what we've seen is pre-running this brand campaign, we were getting X amount of conversions. Now we ran the campaign, or we're running the campaign, and then additional things we're promoting, and that's seeing that people are converting easier or more. And I would say that is the way that I would use brand.
So is it sort of like a campaign across the funnel? So you're doing maybe brand awareness at the top level, but you have other ways to move things move people, buyers down the funnel systematically, basically.
Yeah, brand awareness mm-hmm. should make you in someone's mind and therefore make them be more inclined to buy from you, is how I would put it. Like, it should be that they're aware of you, you're not scary, you're not this big new thing that they're like having to commit to. It should be that it's something that they're already convinced, they already trust you, they understand what you stand for some degree, and therefore then they're more inclined to purchase or do whatever additional thing you want them to do. Yeah. That would be how I would view brand awareness.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I'm going to cheat because I have another question, but it's selfish. Like, something we've been looking at is like direct search or like the keyword term ranking for like meter. Yeah. As an indicator. Is that something that you think is a way lightly to track?
For sure. I think you can, because like there's stuff like the search. There's also like, we had quite like a robust like mentions tracker at WeTransfer for a while, which helped like PR and brand like all stay aligned of having a goal. So I think there are different ways of tracking brand. Yeah, I guess like if I was going to give you the list, yeah, keyword search or direct organic views to the website, and then probably looking at something like social following would be something that you can kind of keep an eye on. But realistically, I think similar to what we've talked about before of this like going further down the funnel, people are going to care about leads, so you kind of have to, I think, somehow bring your brand campaign not as a standalone brand campaign and then you do lead campaigns. You kind of have to have this more like robust campaign which feels like, okay, we know we're doing top level, but we understand that that's going to ultimately help us convert. Because if you just keep saying, I'm going to start doing brand awareness campaigns, everyone's going to look at you and be like, please don't, we don't have the budget, and why would we do this?
Yeah, 100%. Okay, that's great. This is super helpful. Any other parting words of wisdom on brand before we wrap up a great episode?
No, I don't think I've got anything wisdom. I mean, I think we always ask for people to come and tell us problems or things that they're finding difficult. I actually thought for next episode, maybe I saved some dilemmas that people were having on TikTok about marketing or company stuff. And I thought maybe we could try and dive into one of those, unless someone comes to us with a dilemma or question on LinkedIn. Guys, we're desperate for someone to interact with us about a marketing thing we're talking about.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay.
Sounds great. Well, Lucy, thank you for being our expert today. I have been furiously scribbling notes because I'm genuinely learning from you live, and it's very top of mind for us right now. So thank you for sharing all your knowledge. It's been
really fun. Thank you for nodding along and making me feel like I'm very helpful. So that was very nice. You really boosted my confidence.
Good. I'm glad. That was the goal. All right.
So like, share, and subscribe, guys. We're going to awkwardly say it every end of the episode.
Please.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.